You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Are we going to have a forfeit in the NFL this weekend? Welcome in. Got some breaking news that we're following. Matt Miller, NFL draft scout and insider for Bleacher Report, tweeted out last hour. A lot of chatter. The NFL could make the Titans forfeit their game against the Buffalo Bills as a punishment for violating COVID protocols. The Titans players held a workout at a Nashville school with the team facility closed. The head coach, Mike Vrabel, said yesterday that players were told not to hold any group workouts. We ask our players, in light of recent tests, to not gather, whether that's a league protocol or us asking them, so we can't just avoid close contact, and we can try to work through this and get back into the building to prepare for Buffalo as quickly as possible. Week 4's game against the Steelers rescheduled for October 25th because of the positive test there. The Titans are scheduled to host the Buffalo Bills this Sunday. That is in doubt right now. That's in serious jeopardy. But the big news is, could the NFL make the Titans forfeit this game as punishment for violating COVID protocols? Now, Mike Vrabel didn't sound as demonstrative as, hey, we told them absolutely positively, no workouts. You can't do, like, you can't be vague on anything. The NFL can't be vague on any of this. And that's what I would want to know. What were you told? What did the NFL say to the Titans? Because they can't go to the facility. Were they told you cannot have any workouts here? Did Mike Vrabel say to his players, you cannot gather? But these players don't know if the game is going to be played this weekend. They got together, we can't go to the facility. We're not supposed to work out, but we got to work out. We don't want to go into a game unprepared. And you got a game against an undefeated Buffalo Bills team. So that's what's going on right now as we speak. There's a chance the Titans will have to forfeit this game coming up this weekend as punishment for violating the safety protocols. Welcome to the program, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com. Our Twitter handle is @DPShow. Some of the other headlines here, Buccaneers at the Bears coming up tonight. No NBA tonight. Don't want to go against the NFL. LeBron and company try to go for a series clinching win on Friday night. The Saints will stay in New Orleans. There was a chance they were going to relocate to Indianapolis. They have a game with the Chargers coming up on Monday night, and they were at least looking at the possibility of playing the Chargers in Indianapolis on Monday night. Braves win, A's win, Rays win, Dodgers win. John Smoltz, the Hall of Famer, was on the call last night of the Padres and the Dodgers. That had some great moments there. Fun moments. We'll talk to Smoltzy about that. Poll question, McLovin, what do you have for us today? Say good morning to our radio affiliates, number 375, and also our TV partner, Peacock.
Would you rather rob a home run to win a game or hit a home run to win a game? Where it's 64% hit a home run.
Yeah, I guess I would rather rob somebody of a home run because it doesn't happen very often. You know, we've seen a lot of home runs, walk-off home runs. I was there with Joe Carter when I was in Sky Dome in Toronto when they beat the Phillies and Joe hit that home run. And that was a magical moment to witness that. And, you know, but to be able to rob somebody of a home run, that's just like Malcolm Butler when he robbed Seattle of a Super Bowl win. You know, Mike Jones, to a lesser degree, when he had the tackle on Dyson with the Titans and the Rams in the Super Bowl. I mean, Malcolm Butler won a Super Bowl. He won it. Individually, he won it. That decision to somehow, you know, get in between the wide receiver and the football and make that catch, and that gave New England a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl. So if you said I could be Santonio Holmes and catch a touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone from Ben Roethlisberger as the Steelers beat Arizona in the Super Bowl, or I could be Malcolm Butler, we'll remember Malcolm Butler's play long, long after we remember Santonio Holmes. We will. There was some chatter about J.J. Watt and the role that he may have played in getting his coach fired, Bill O'Brien. And I guess there was an altercation as far as a heated exchange between Bill O'Brien and J.J. Watt. This was during a recent practice. And the incident also included a defensive coordinator who took place in the week leading up to the winless Texans' Week 3 loss to the Steelers. And sources confirmed ESPN a verbal blow-up at practice, and that the incident was when O'Brien, quote, lost the team. Titans or Texans now 0-4, and O'Brien was fired as the head coach. And J.J. Watt, of course, the three-time defensive player of the year, said yesterday he's looking forward to a fresh start after O'Brien was fired. I'm not going to talk to you about what happened at practice or what conversations were had or whatever it may be, Watt said. The situation is what the situation is, and we right now have a fresh start, and we had a good practice today. We're looking forward to Jacksonville. Man, sounds like he's with the Patriots. Do you remember when we had J.J. Watt on? We had this clip. I played this clip. This is from back in June. And J.J. is asked about Bill O'Brien. And I saw this unfold live, and I went, oh, my God. It looked so awkward and sounded so awkward. And I'll let you reminisce or judge for yourself. Here is J.J. Watt asked about Bill O'Brien and what makes him such a good coach.
You're there on the inside. What makes Bill O'Brien a good head coach? He's got two new play callers with him. It's a little bit different role. What makes him good at leading this team?
I think his job is to do just that, is to lead the team, is to obviously he's more of an offensive guy than a defensive guy, so it's to lead the overall team, but then to lead the offense, and now with his other roles as well, is to general manage, is to do everything within the organization. That's his role, and I think that's what obviously he excels at.
I don't think there's a compliment in there. And the body language is terrible. He's like, oh, God, how do I say something without really saying something? How does Derek Jeter do it all these years? That you look like you're saying something, you don't say anything. Yeah. Yeah, Paul.
And J.J. is a good-ass dude. He can talk nice about anybody.
Yes, he can.
You know, he's the head coach, and he's got the parking spot, and the parking spot's his. I mean, we got the head coach title there, and by being the head coach, that means he runs the team, hence head coach. He's the head of the team, and that's all I really want to say about that.
And he's an offensive-minded guy, and, you know, that, yeah. Yeah, okay. Next question there. Then I think part of the ownership came out and said, hey, we weren't going to be able to re-sign DeAndre Hopkins. We all know that. I just told you, you know, before most people did, that they're going to trade him. That was, you know, it's one of those, everybody knew it. And inside with the Texans. And I was told by somebody with the Texans, like, no, he's gone. He and Bill don't get along. He wants out, and he wants to get paid. My problem was, you didn't get anything for him. And DeAndre Hopkins is leading the NFL in catches right now. So that was the only point that I was bringing up with that. And I don't know Bill O'Brien, and he just strikes me as he's going to be a coordinator someplace. But to be a head coach and a GM, you know, it's tough enough to be a head coach. So I don't know what's going to happen as far as, you know, filling that void there. But there's probably going to be five or six, you know, openings here by the end of the year. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, Dabo, by the way, said he's not going to even answer questions about the Texans and doesn't want to go there.
And he shouldn't answer them. Even if he wants to go there, I wouldn't answer those questions right now. He's got a football season to prepare for. You can't hire somebody. You can't bring in an assistant coach like Eric Bieniemy for the Chiefs and go, okay, here you go, in the middle of a season. You know, there's rules that prevent you from doing that. If Dabo, hey, I'm worried about Miami this weekend. Yes, Paulie.
I just smell Dabo getting a big pay raise around January 9th. Hey, we just signed an 8-year extension to Dabo Swinney for blah, 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 blah.
Doesn't remember Les Miles? Whenever Les Miles wanted a raise, he would just say, let me see if I can call my friend at who's the AD at Arkansas. Hey, can you act like you're interested in me? Again? Yeah, but I don't know. Let's say something different this time. Yeah, I'll get you something. I'll get you a nice gift here. I'll get you a bass boat, okay? Just say you like me and you're thinking, and we'd be crazy not to consider Les Miles. And LSU announcing Les Miles has signed a contract extension through the year 3057. Let's see, what else did I see? I'm going to play this again for you because I Seton brought this up a couple days ago. And he said, you know what, I was watching this play, and it reminded me of, we don't have this kind of ambiance in the bubble. Like, this is what we really miss. NBA did a great job. They pulled this off. We're going to have a champion in the NBA. Then they'll regroup, probably start the season at the end of January. But you miss these moments. And this moment taking place in Golden State, Game 7, it was 2016, the NBA Finals. And here's the call by Mike Breen on ABC.
Each team has a foul to give as we come up on a minute remaining.
And they're putting Curry in the pick and roll, trying to get him on Irving. Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up. It's good! Kyrie Irving from downtown! And the Cavaliers by three!
That's what you miss. That's on the road, and Mike Breen and Mark Jackson are struggling just to, you know, they're battling the crowd there. And that's what I miss. Now, we haven't had that many exciting plays in the NBA Finals, but we have had that in other series here. But, you know, it's, they're doing their best. It's a sterile environment. They've tried to amp it up a little bit. Even baseball last night, watching it. Football, it feels like there is a crowd there. You know, but we don't see that crowd. So you're okay with just hearing the noise. When you see that there's no crowd, in Major League Baseball, there's no crowd, then you realize, hey, this is kind of a trick that they're playing on us. But the NFL, they've done a pretty good job with that. Yeah, McLovin.
I'm watching Derek Fisher's game-winning NBA Finals. It's like he rises up out of the crowd, which are all standing on their feet visually, too. You're right. But is that one of the reasons ratings are down?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I watch. I never care about ratings. I couldn't care less. Like, if I watch it, I want to watch it. If there's something, you know, great that happens, if it's boring, you know, then, you know, you decide what you want to watch, when you want to watch it, how much you want to watch it. The NBA has had a storyline, a couple of different storylines, but the overriding storyline was the bubble. And could they make it happen? And it almost felt like after that if it's going to happen, anything else is going to pale in comparison. This is just going to be known as the bubble. You know, Major League Baseball, same thing. You know, they struggled to get to the finish line. Regular season. NHL. You guys know who won the Stanley Cup?
Yep.
Tampa Bay Lightning. Okay, just want to remind you because that might get lost in a couple of years from now or a year from now.
I can't tell you who won the Baseball World Series last year, though. No, generally baseball always gets lost in the last 5 years. I know the Nats won, but...
Considering the strangeness of 2020, you wouldn't think that this was do or die for any Major League Baseball team. But as the division series get going, there seems to be a whole lot of pressure on one particular team, and that's the Dodgers. Dodgers beating the Padres last night. They took a 2-0 series lead, and Cody Bellinger stole a home run from Fernando Tatis, the play of the game. And, you know, it almost feels like relief for Dodger fans. Like, you want to win, you want to celebrate. It just feels like, and Clayton Kershaw gave up back-to-back home runs, and you just go, oh, no. And then they win. They dominated all season long. And most of the teams in this year's playoffs don't have as much to lose, it feels like. You know, the Rays and the Braves and the A's, you know, they're all up and coming. The Yankees have that huge payroll. But their fans realize they have serious flaws. I mean, that's a softball team. They don't have a great rotation. They don't have great middle relief, and they lost to the Rays. The Dodgers can't afford to trip up here. And it feels like every move that Dave Roberts makes is magnified. And you got some big decisions here. And when Kenley Jansen comes in, you hold your breath. And you're relieved when he saves a game. But the Dodgers are winning. But until they capture another World Series, I don't think anybody is going to be satisfied. And then on top of that, if the Lakers win, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, Dodgers, it's your turn. Not that that's fair, but that's the landscape right now. We'll check in with John Smoltz. He was on the call last night on Fox Sports. And Troy Aikman calls out the Cowboys defense. I think that the Washington football team made a mistake. I think they made a mistake with their choice at quarterback. I'll have that for you as well. And also a preposterous quote from a member of the Dallas Cowboys defense. I am a tease machine.
Easy, Greenberg.
Tease machine. Mike Greenberg just said, whoa, slow down there. Get up. That's what I like to say. All right, let me take a break here. We'll check in with Smoltzy. Phone calls are welcome. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. 375 radio stations going strong. 376 is next week. Juneau, Alaska.
Yep.
We finally did it. We finally did it. You know, I thought L.A. was big, you know, being in L.A., big market. But I said, I got to get Juneau. Somehow, you got to get me into Juneau. And we did
it. So pumped.
Yeah.
So pumped.
Yeah. Baked Alaska next week. All week.
For breakfast?
All day, Baked Alaska. That's what we're doing.
And the trivia segment that we have coming up called Juneau.
Ooh.
It's going to be trivia every day. Maybe it's like this day in sports history, but it's Juneau.
Boom.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Kind of borrowing from Todd's playbook on that one. But
ooh. And that's a dangerous playbook.
Juneau.
Yeah.
We do put the Jew in Juneau, at least the
thank
back
you, Todd.
Row.
All right. Back row. Good Yontif. Good Yontif. Yes.
Just had the high holy days a little while ago.
Yeah, we're done with that. Yeah, you took the day off. Todd's got his Astros jersey on today. I love it. Every time they lose, Todd gets to wear
only
it the next
when they
day.
Lose.
By the way, Todd's birthday is on Saturday, same day, same month, same year as Brett Favre.
Thanks. Finally, someone acknowledges that.
And this weekend, we're going to celebrate with a friends and family sale. And that means our audience. You're our friends. Sign up for the Dan Patrick Show newsletter that comes out every morning. It is a must read for the show prep. Go to danpatrick.com. You'll receive a code for 40% off t-shirts.
40%?
40%
off. Them away.
Just because of the same day, same month, same year sale.
I got to close this down.
With Todd Fritz. 40% off t-shirts in the merchandise store just for this special occasion. Take a break. John Smoltz just popped up there on Zoom. In his hotel room. We'll talk to Smoltz coming up next. And we'll check in with the Patriots as well. Only one positive there with Stephon Gilmore. We'll see if the Patriots game against the Broncos is in jeopardy. Is Cam Newton going to play? So that'll be coming up a little bit later on as well. We're going to take a break. 19 after the hour. Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. We'll talk to the Hall of Famer John Smoltz in a moment. He was on the call last night. Dodgers Padres. Well, there was an interesting moment there where the Dodgers responding to the Padres. Manny Machado's out there yelling at the Dodgers. In fact, here's Mookie Betts talking about that exchange that Machado was getting upset that the Dodgers had the audacity to celebrate after Cody Bellinger's great catch.
I just feel like, you know, when he hit his home run, you know, he threw the bat and this, that, and the other. And then when we take one away, we can celebrate, too. So it's got to be two sides to it. That was just what I was saying.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. Back and forth there. Padres trying to hold on here. They're down 0-2. John Smoltz was on the call last night, courtesy of Fox Sports, and he joins us now. Some festivities there, a little fireworks there, some bad blood there as well. What did you take away from this game last night?
Yeah, definitely. I think without the fans, right, you got to generate your own intensity and and I've seen that the teams that have the most excitement in their dugouts, it may not always be received well because we don't typically get to hear the bantering going back and forth. Well, guess what? You can hear just about everything. And as a broadcaster, you know, all I could have done is said, look, here, I'm throwing my mask at you. I mean, that's all I could have done. But I could check a couple things off of my list of things I've never seen. I've never seen a glove throw that long other than Jesse Orozco, maybe when he threw his up to the sky and they won the whole thing, their series. So, I kind of agree that I echoed the same sentiments of what Mookie Betts said. You know, the only thing you just can't have in this game, you can't have it both ways. You got to be able to take what comes back at you when you show that kind of emotion. And I'm fine with the emotion. It's just the emotion sometimes is trying to create something for your team because you're behind and you hope it had carryover effect. And it looked like it did because they went back to back on the homers.
Okay. But the Dodger pitcher who's celebrating gave up a home run. Like if Bellinger doesn't bring it back, like he can't celebrate. He didn't strike out the side.
No, he
gave up a bomb, John.
Yeah, he did. He gave up it turned into one of the best catches you're going to see in a while. And I think he was so excited that his teammate caught it.
But he's blowing kisses to the Padres dugout there.
I guess here's the thing that I've always said, you know, when you watch baseball and you see the exuberant celebrations on home runs, the unbelievable bat flips. Why? I ask you this question.
Okay.
Why does the hitters only get to do it? You never see. We look at Trevor Bauer and he's the outlier when he walks off the mound the way he does. I think as pitchers, as a group of pitchers, it's time that they start showing some excitement. I did the Pascual Perez thing, you know, back in the day, a little shimmy when. Yeah, I got a chance to strike him out. No, it's all good.
I'm okay with pitchers. Dennis Eckersley used to, you know, shoot you down.
You, get out. You're next. Yes. Get out. Yeah. We need more of that, I guess.
I love it. I'm fine with all of that. I want baseball to be a celebration. Mm-hmm. I know, John, you got to get kids watching. And I'm not saying be gimmicky, but if I'm a kid and I'm watching, it doesn't move. People throw really hard and swing really hard. Other than that, there's no joy in Mudville. And that's my biggest concern with baseball is how do you create an atmosphere if I'm a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old? Because your demo is in the 50s probably, mid-50s. Yeah. You got to create something that if I'm a sports fan, why am I watching this? Well, you're watching it because these guys have fun. Tatis, love it. I love it. You know, you want to do that bat flip? If you got a guy on the mound who's striking people out, punching you out, I'm good with that as well. Have fun. Every other sport does.
Yeah, and that's my only point. It's like it's only kind of the hitters that get to do it. And look, if a pitcher started doing it, it would probably be a little bit more entertaining because they have the opportunity to do it a few more times to the same batter. But It's interesting how the only thing I would say is that the context of sometimes you can't get mad if the other team's going to do something. You just can't. That's the only thing. And in the heat of the moment, of course, you can always have your all right, we'll give them a break type thing. But when I saw the glove toss, I got to be honest. I was like, that's a first. And if he had the insight to be able to do that based on the bat tossed, like to do that quickly, that would be, I got to give him some props. I understand that the Dodgers absolutely love this kid. And certainly if you throw 100 and you got a wipeout slider like he does, I guess it's easy to love him.
Would you rather hit a game-winning home run or have the game-winning catch? Like if you could have had Bellinger's catch to win a game or a home run, a walk-off?
I've always said, you know, I've robbed more home runs than any pitcher in the history of the game, right? I mean, that's a fact. Because I kept track in shagging fly balls, but I would much rather rob a home run. I think that's one of the coolest plays we rarely get to see. If I were commissioner, I would make sure every stadium, except Boston, you can't really change that wall. I would make sure every fence has a chance for a guy to rob a home run. I think it's one of the most exciting plays. The game winning home run, there's just so much more of them that catch last night. Look, that's a game changing
Yes.
kind of series changer.
Yeah.
And in a short series, you know, if that was a best of seven in game two, you know, you got much more time to kind of rebound from it. That's game. That's a basically game two of a best of five. And that's much more difficult to come back from.
I had a couple of notes as I was watching the game last night. First of all, the ballpark itself. So you have two teams that aren't used, you know, it's not their home field there. Right. Do you play differently now that you're in this bubble and you're not able to be in your ballpark? I mean, the Dodgers would at least be familiar with the Padres ballpark, and here you are in a different ballpark. And how does strategy change for these two teams?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, you're look, I mean, the ball's jumping out of those other two ballparks that they play in the other series. So there's 18 home runs in L.A. and, what, 15 home runs in San Diego. So the familiarity of when you hit a ball is pretty obvious to those guys. Here they're getting used to, okay, this was the first night that the ball actually carried a little bit. We saw some homers go over the fence. This is a big ballpark. It's a really, really beautiful park. And I think you would play differently from a base running standpoint because the gaps are huge. Defensively, you're going to have to cover more. So those things come into play. But what a great venue. And I think both clubs have talked about how big the ballpark is. And certainly they've squared up some balls that got caught. So if you have some defense out there in center field, especially, you're going to take away a lot of runs.
Talking to John Smoltz, the Hall of Famer, working for Fox Sports. He had the call last night with the Dodgers and Padres. You talked about Clayton Kershaw. Some of these pitchers have their own catcher. Explain how a catcher is that much different for a pitcher.
Well, the familiarity of just being on the same page, right? There are times that you aren't on the same page and that continuity kind of affects the flow. And when you know there's a guy back there that's thinking along the same lines of you, and he's doing your work, he's doing his work, and you've done yours, and they match up, that is something that is hard to explain to the viewer that why that's so important. You would think that throwing to anybody based on your stuff would be okay, but the way a guy catches the ball, the way he frames it, the way his setup is, can be appealing. And on the opposite side, it can be a little awkward when you don't see things the same way. A bigger catcher, for example, might not frame well. I've thrown to a lot of different catchers, and there is a difference between the way they set up, how they receive, and how you're on the same page. You don't want to be out there shaking your head a lot. You want to be able to be in rhythm.
How do you tell the other catcher that you don't want him?
The numbers will speak pretty obviously. I think the disparity of the ERA between the two catchers, and not that Will Smith's not a great catcher, was pretty high, and sometimes the sample size isn't good, but I think that comes to the manager. I've only had one instance where I felt compelled to go to Bobby Cox and go, give me the kid, give me Brian McCann. It just happened to work out. We won 7 games in a row. He stayed up in the big leagues, and the rest was history for him. But you've seen over the course of time that pitchers definitely are comfortable with, I guess, quote unquote, personal catchers. The other thing you'll hear is, hey, we need to give so-and-so a day off, so he just happens to be the guy that catches this guy.
What were the Yankees doing in the previous game? Not the one they lost last night, because I think they may have lost the series by trying to be too smart to out-raise the Rays with, the lineup, right hand, left hand, that whole thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, when you make those decisions, you feel like they're the right decisions at the moment, and you hope they all work out. But, what we're seeing is a kind of a confluence, if you will, between the organizations that have, in this setup, which we have never seen with no off days, have the ability to be able to go deep in a series, which gives them the advantage depth-wise. In my memory, I don't remember too many series where you go in and go, we don't have a fourth or a fifth starter. And in some cases, we didn't have a third starter. But the Yankees kind of have that. And to your point, I'm a little intrigued with why they set up, the situation the way they did. And you're right. If they don't win this game, I'm assuming that Gerrit Cole would pitch game 5.
Yeah.
But this format is really going to either shed light on some things or expose some things for these clubs. I just think it gives the team with the best depth the best chance to move forward. And you might very well say the Rays have the best depth in the American League for sure.
Yeah, I have the Rays and the Dodgers in the World Series. But if you said that it was going to be the Dodgers and Astros, I'd sign up for that right now.
Well, the storylines, there'd be a lot to talk about, right? I mean, there would be – you want to talk about the emotion and the things that you're going to see. Now, at that point, we'll have some fans, which would be nice. It won't be a packed house, but at least some
fans. But not home ballparks, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And I think – look, I understand. I totally understand where the Astros are as a team. I just think it's hard sometimes – You got to bite your tongue and you just got to prove it. You just got to go out and prove it. And that's what they're doing. They're playing great team baseball, and they've lost a lot of stars. And certainly the narrative is going to be one that you really can't speak to if you're them, because it just has one of those, you just know when, you know, scenarios attached to it.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear from them. I don't want it to be, hey, you know, can you criticize us now? If you could play this way, then why did you cheat? That's still what I keep coming back to. If you're this good, we thought you were this good, then why did you cheat?
Yeah, and again, like I said, it's this year will come and go. We'll find out a champion. We'll be able to talk about, I think, the hardest road to a champion ever. I think the World Series winner is going to have a no asterisks and, by the way, probably the hardest journey that they've ever had, not even taking into considerations the COVID journey. It's just the tournament itself presents so many tough obstacles. And I'll say this. Nobody has more pressure than the Dodgers. And the second most team that has the pressure is probably the Yankees. But nobody has had more pressure than the Dodgers, and they've handled it so far incredibly well.
Yeah, I just get a sense of when they win, it's relief, not celebration.
Yeah, that's a good depiction of where they're at, because you think about that first series is a scary best of three. And then this series, of course, with it's rare that you have the two best records playing this early, but that's the way it's set up. And it just so happens the Padres have unfortunately lost some key pitching to not be able to mix and match the way they thought they could against, you know, the bullies of their division, because for the last 5 years they've had their way with the Padres, and it's going to be a new next 5 years in the West.
There's certain pitchers, you know, I thought Pedro had his Sandy Koufax moment. He had like 5 or 6 years, which he was just incredible in the American League, in that ballpark. You know, obviously Sandy Koufax, you pitched with Maddux on your team. Kershaw's had that run as well. Does Kershaw fit in with those guys with having that 5-6 year window that is historical?
Oh, absolutely. When I do a game, you know, you dive back into the numbers and you got to check it like three times, go, really? This is his career numbers? It doesn't seem – it just seems like it's a video game. And I think to his credit, what he's been able to do over the course of his career and in this era, he's the perfect pitcher that could pitch in any era. Like, they talk about certain pitchers 15 years ago that couldn't pitch today. They're probably right. But in the sense that this era – is a swing and miss and homer era, he has still dominated because he's figured out how to do that. And I'll tell you the one thing, you know, I know we're going to all talk about his postseason's ups and downs, but you watch at the end of his career, it's going to be more up than it is down. And that's the one thing. Keep giving the ball on the guy in this time frame, and he's going to deliver.
I think it's a great point, and I was thinking about that I wanted to ask you. As I watch him, and he gets so many swings and misses. And in this game now, it is a swing and either connect or miss. You don't put the ball in play. And to have that ability, you know, he was topping out at like 92, I think, on his fastball. But, you know, that's just to kind of keep you honest there. You know, that. But those breaking balls and these guys swinging for the downs there, you know, how would Maddux have been in today's game where he wanted you to put the ball in play?
I love this question, and I will argue with anybody who thinks that he would get beat up. There's no way. He would absolutely dominate in this era. The one thing about the style of hitting is there's no adjustments, right? So I get the fact that the easiest way to score is to hit a home run. So you wait for a mistake. You don't have to alter your swing, and you mash them. He's not going to give you a chance to get the ball in the area where you want to. And that's the one difference between the style of pitching today, where you live in the zone with stuff because the stuff is phenomenal. But when you make a mistake, it goes a long way. And I just don't think Greg makes a lot of mistakes. I watched over the course of his career just carve guys up on the corners and be able to get them to chase velocity, then change speeds. And I think that's the one, you know, it's very difficult to transcend kind of eras. I wish we could do it. And we could do it statistically, but you can't do it in your mind to think like, oh, this guy would get killed and this guy would do this. I know his strikeouts would go up and his homers would go up, but I don't think he would suffer because the style of hitting would cause him to suffer. It would be his pitching that would expose the style of hitting.
John, of course, in the Hall of Fame, but you did have 3 career stolen bases.
Oh yeah.
Didn't you steal 3rd once?
You know, before people ever got to know me as a pitcher, I was the official pinch runner when I got called up under Russ Nixon. And I still talk about one of the most infamous moments of where I pinch ran in San Diego, And I was called earlier than I was prepared for because I didn't have my spikes on. I had my church seat on. And I say this all the time. I had milk duds. I was enjoying a great game in the dugout. And I got called in, and I couldn't find my helmet. Jody Davis was at first. I had to shove the box of milk duds in my back pocket. And it took about 5 minutes to get a helmet. I realized as I was running out, he had my helmet. We switched helmets. I got to first. Benito Santiago was behind the plate, so I was scared to death to get picked off. I got thrown out at second by just a little bit on a I think it was a bunt, and I slid on my milk duds, and I got chewed out later by my manager for not having spikes. So, but I say all that I did have speed back then, and no, it didn't look like it. I did, but I have, yeah, 3 stolen bases in my career.
Milk
in the postseason, I have a stolen base too.
Oh, of course you do. Yeah,
only have that.
Yeah, not many pitchers have a stolen base in the postseason.
Did I tell you I've robbed back-to-back homers on back-to-back pitches in BP? That's still, I mean, I just thought I'd throw that out there. It's hard to do back-to-back pitches.
No, people still talk about that.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
and I have a baseball card robbing a home run. It's my favorite baseball card.
I'm not going to bring up the Barry Bonds home run or anything like that.
Yeah, probably shouldn't. He did do it though. He said what he was going to do, and he did it.
And you threw twice. And you threw a great pitch.
Twice.
Yes.
Bad man.
It's always a great pitch. Man, he hit a great pitch there. You know, Nobody ever says, man, he hit a crappy pitch there. John will be on the call with Matt Vasgersian tonight. Game 3, Padres-Dodgers at 9 Eastern, exclusively on MLB Network. And then Game 4, potential Game 5, we're on air on Fox Sports 1. Great to talk to you. We'll be watching tonight, John.
You got it.
Thank you, man. That's Johnny Smoltz, Hall of Famer. Milk dud boy. We'll take a break. Phone calls coming up next. I got a problem with the Washington football team, with their decision to bench Dwayne Haskins. Have that for you. And I got a real problem with a member of the Dallas Cowboys defense. Have that for you coming up as well. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. We will check in with the Tennessee Titans coming up. If you're just joining us, it's not a pretty sight right now, and we're still waiting to see what are the possible contingency plans. If they play this game against Buffalo, where are they going to play it? When are they going to play it? Diana Rossini does a great job for the mothership. She says she's told by the Titans and Bills players, they were told there's an option of playing their Sunday game on Monday or Tuesday in Nashville. If that happens, Thursday night's game between the Chiefs at the Bills would be moved to Saturday. This is all just being discussed. But we'll check in with the Titans coming up. New Orleans is not going to relocate for their Monday night game due to the Hurricane Delta, I believe, that they were going to go to Indianapolis and then ask the Chargers to come there and play on Monday night. A couple other stories. I heard this from Xavier Woods. He's the safety for the Cowboys. And given how bad the Cowboys have been, this is the worst 3-game stretch a Cowboys defense has ever performed in. And Xavier Woods, the Cowboys safety, had this to say after their loss this past weekend.
My effort's been good. I mean, certain plays, me included, it may be a lack, but overall, the effort is there. We're in the NFL. You don't expect guys to full speed for 70 plays. That's not possible. But we're going to push as hard as we can. I mean, we know. You don't expect a backside corner to go make a play on the opposite side. He running full speed the whole time. It's not possible, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad you're honest, but that's not something you should be honest about. You don't verbalize that. Your defense has been horrible. Looks like you guys have quit on plays, lack of effort. This is what I would ask Xavier Woods. Well, do you get a full paycheck, or do you only get, let's say, 90%? Like, you know, you take plays off. Should I give you a full paycheck, or do I give you like 90% or 80% of your paycheck? Based on the way they played, I wouldn't give anybody any paycheck on that defense there. Here is Troy Aikman, the Hall of Famer, NFL and Fox analyst, talking about that Dallas defense.
To me, I'd be embarrassed as a player to put that kind of performance on film that's going to be seen by your peers for the rest of the season. It was just not very good, and I know Mike Nolan is in the firing line right now, but, you know, over the years, you could always point to the way that the Cowboys played defensively. I mean, they played with great effort. You know, they just flew around 11 guys and didn't always play great, but it was always there on film as far as the effort level. And, I mean, I didn't see one guy on defense that I'd say had a good game. And the last touchdown that Odell Beckham scored when they'd cut it to 3 points, you know, they had all the momentum. If they make a stop there defensively, they probably win the game.
Troy's right. You just don't have any effort here. And I said this at the beginning of the season, and I did have trepidation on picking the Cowboys to go to the World Series, or the Super Bowl, because of their defense. Offense, I think we thought they were going to be off the charts, and so far they've been off the charts. But the defense, as I said to McLovin, they always have big names, but they have big names because they're with the Dallas Cowboys. If those players played at some other place, there would be half the interest in, you know, just how good they are, because they've got some named players, but they're not doing anything. And I can't imagine Mike Nolan holds on to this job very, you know, too much longer. You got the Giants, and if you beat the Giants, that doesn't solve everything. But if you don't beat the Giants, we got real big problems now. Because Jerry goes all in. Every year, you know, he got his shiny object in CeeDee Lamb. We got 3 wide receivers, get 1,000 yards. We got Zeke. We got Dak. We got it all. Well, okay, the offensive line's been banged up, and the defense has had some injuries, and then the defense is basically mailing it in. And that's an issue. And this is up to Jerry Jones to do something. This is a easy division. You might go 8-8 and win this division. And if you don't win this division this year, I would seriously look at Mike McCarthy and say, is he the right guy for this job? Now, you brought in the defensive coordinator, so it's on you as well. But, man, you got to play with a little more effort. And do not say, hey, everybody takes plays off. We know they do, but you don't say that when you have been this bad. Historically bad. Yes, Paulie.
We play 100%, 67% of the time.
We'll check in on the Titans and the Patriots. Final hour, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show.